2012 New Vrindavan, and also His Holiness Vaishnavaswami's Appearance Day celebration.
Assembled there to worship Lord Shiva, conclusion of their worship, he appeared to them in person and blessed them with Krishna Bhakti. Lord Shiva was especially favorable towards Nimbarkacharya, Nimbaditya, who had been very attentive and earnest in his worship. And he directed him further. He said, at the edge of this village is a sacred bale forest wherein resides your gurus, the four Kumaras. Go there, serve them, and they will fulfill your deepest aspiration. He proceeded into that forest and saw on a raised platform these four personalities, very young, very noble, and completely naked, wrapped in deep meditation and a great exultation. The Bhargacharyas cried out, Hare Krishna. The four Kumaras opened their eyes and saw before them the ideal Vaishnava. One by one they came forward and embraced him. And then Sanat Kumar spoke. Seeing that the upcoming Kali Yuga would be extremely troublesome, the all-merciful Lord empowered and dispatched four men to preach. Vishnu Swami III, Madhvacharya, and Ramanuja. And we are pleased to receive you as the fourth of these great souls. Sanat Kumar instructed Nimbarkacharya in the worship of Sri Sri Radha Krishna by means of the Radha Krishna mantra, by which he worshipped them with great earnest on the path of Bhava Marga. One night, as he was absorbed in his meditation and puja, that forest was illuminated by the appearance of the divine form of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna together, and they spoke, you are most fortunate for having taken up sadra in Navadvip Dham, our dear abode, where we in the future become one, taking on one form. And as they said this, the forms of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna became the one form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nimbarkacharya just fell on the ground in amazement and wonder, crying out that I had never seen such a form before. And Mahaprabhu told him, keep this a secret. Just preach Krishna Bhakti and the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, for I delight in these topics. and begin my movement, I will incorporate two essential items from the teachings of all the founder acharyas. From Madhva, I will accept worship of the deity of Krishna as an eternal personal principle and the powerful philosophy to defeat Mayavadis. From Ramanujacharya, I will accept bhakti, pure, unpolluted by karma and jnana, and service to the devotees. From Vishnuswami, I will accept exclusive dependence on the mercy of Krishna and the path of Raga Bhakti. And from you, I will be pleased to accept two most crucial items: the high esteem for Srimati Radharani and the necessity for following in the footsteps of the devotees. And true to his prophecy, the Mahaprabhu began to preach. He took those principles of the four founder acharyas, which were like the four cornerstones, from which he adopted their elements of their preaching, which were not in complete harmony with each other, and he unified them, synthesized them, and perfectly harmonized them in a higher perspective. Tonight is the last night of Kartik. During which a very special rasa lila was performed. Because when Sri Krishna left Vrajadham, it just broke the hearts of all the residents, especially the gopis. Baladev pleaded with Krishna to return. Uddhava pleaded with Krishna. Krishna would not return. It was actually Lalita Devi's swan messenger, Hansaduta, who convinced Krishna by narrating her long and pathetic introduction to the message of Srimati Radharani, who pleaded largely on behalf of Nanda and Yashoda, whose sorrowful faces made the Brijavasis think that Krishna was just going to kill them all after that. Krishna confided in Uddhava, I must return now, and Uddhava was very delighted to drive the chariot, and Baladev was very delighted, his angelic face. upset that they lost control of their herd. But they don't end up. Do they dare to believe that Uddhava has truly brought Krishna back? Krishna returned to Braja on the first day of Kartik, as did Lord Gauranga. And as the herd of cows reached the chariot, and every cow was simultaneously trying to embrace Krishna, and the chariot was rocking back and forth, Krishna asked all the cows how they were doing, and he asked, "My mothers, have you missed me as much as I missed you?" And they all in unison said, Krishna is an expert charioteer, and he guided the chariot through the herd of cows to one gopa who had a dark complexion and a golden dhoti and a red turban and an ornate buffalo horn. And he jumped off the chariot and embraced that gopa to his heart. This was Sri Dhamma, who would cry pathetically if Krishna is out of his sight for a moment. And he embraced him and he held him by the shoulders and said, "Sri Dhamma, I am back." But Sri Dhamma was stunned. He couldn't believe it. Only when he felt Gopa's heart beating in resonance with his own did he dare to believe it. And then he just began singing, "Gopa, Gopa, Gopa." And then, like thunder, this mantra just rolled across the pastures of Raja. "Gopal has returned." And the gopas began to sing and dance. And that sound, that Gopal has returned, reverberated within the hearts of all the Vrindavasis. And then, when he met Nanda Yashoda, his mother bathed him in her tears and her breast milk. And Nanda Maharaj, he would have to, after embracing Krishna, hold him at arm's length to look, is he really back? And Krishna was so inseparable from Mother Yashoda that as they offered Artik, it was to Yashoda and go all together. And then they went into the palace for all the usual festivities. And after the late evening entertainment, when everyone went to bed to dream very lovingly about Krishna's glorious return to Braja, Krishna pretended to go to sleep. And so Mother Yashoda softly walked to the door and looked back. And he seemed to be sleeping. She gently closed the door. And then he jumped up and out the window and through the groves and pastures to the rendezvous point, where Srimati Radharani, who had sent a message by way of the wind, "When will that day come when all my friends come running in all directions and tell me that Krishna has returned?" And they did. And she asked Lalita Devi, "Is it true?" She said, "It is as they say." And everything was ready. Blue sari, gold earrings. She would be bathed and dressed and decorated by the sakis and mandris. She kept wanting to run to Krishna, but Lalita Devi stopped her. She said, "Everything has to be just perfect before you can go." And even when she was perfectly decorated, she said, "Don't be too eager. He made you wait for him. Now he can wait for you." So when they finally met in the Kunj, in the forest, this is the time when that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita explains how she cursed the ecstatic symptoms that prevented her from properly receiving Krishna. Her eyes were flooded with tears, her limbs were stunned, she was speechless. But she subdued those ecstasies and asked, Krishna, why did you stay away for so long? Do you think the separation was trivial to us? He was unable to respond. The only sound was that of his tears falling upon her feet. And then he repeated the same message he had said with Uddhava, that separation from me is not possible at any time, any place, any circumstance, because I'm all pervaded. She did not want to hear about the super soul, Jnana Yoga, or Astanga Yoga. It was only when he explained to her that love cannot exist by itself. It requires a subject and an object. I am the object, you are the subject, and there is nothing so great, nor will there ever be, as our love. That was the music she wanted to hear. And that had to be put to a dance. So beneath the clear Kartik sky, as the moon rose, gopis formed a circle. Radha and Krishna took the center position and they began to dance. And every night, throughout the whole month of Kartik, they would have Rasalila. And they had a similar pattern. In the midst of the dance, Krishna would disappear with Srimati Radha, and he would leave her. And all the gopis would assemble together, chanting Krishna's glories and holy names, and he would reappear. They would accuse him of being callous and ungrateful to their sacrifice, and he would explain. The reason he left them on many different levels. Obviously, it's the same reason that Krishna purifies neophyte devotees by placing them in difficulties and disappointment and frustration and bankruptcy and mistreatment and misunderstanding. And if we try to understand why is Krishna doing this to us, we can't understand. Because his love is beyond the realm of the mind or the intellect. But basically, he's doing it to purify us, to increase our love. Because there's no obstacle that enough love cannot overcome. There is no pain that sufficient love cannot endure. And if you can develop sufficient love, you'll be the most powerful person. But even the most powerful person, Krishna, found that the love of the gopis was greater than himself. And therefore the verse, yayatam, yayatamam prapadente tamstataiva bhajamyam, as one approaches me, I reciprocate. He could not reciprocate with the gopis. His love was beyond his ability. His love was more powerful than him. His love controlled him. Subdued him, he surrendered to it. So he explained through questions and answers why he places his devotees in difficulties, in emotional ordeals, the epitome of which is separation from Krishna, in which Krishna is more present. Because when he's present before his devotees, they pour out everything in their hearts to him, in words and deeds. But when he's absent, that whole external world disappears, and the devotee goes internal and finds that Krishna is there within his heart. Tonight, the Rasa Lila was a little different than the other nights, because Krishna stole away Radha as usual. And they wandered beyond Kunchari, at the furthest extent of Govardhan Hill, some yojanas further to a mountain, Mount Rohita, which was decorated with beautiful lakes adorned with celestial lotuses and swans and birds and turtles. And as Radha and Krishna sat on an elevated stone platform, Srimati saw on the far shore of the lake a sage in rapt meditation who was oblivious to their presence. And she asked, "Who's that?" And he said, "That's Ribhu Muni, who has been performing severe tapasya for 66,000 years. And Krishna called to him, "Ribhu Muni," but he didn't respond because he was so absorbed in the darshan of the Lord in his heart. And only when Krishna removed himself from within the heart of the sage and he opened his eyes to see the object of his ultimate worship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna right before him, that he came over and offered his prayers and circumambulated them. And then he emerged into the form of Krishna. And Krishna called him again to come out. And then a celestial chariot came down from above and transported him back to Godhead. And the body he left behind melted and flowed into a beautiful river. And Srimati asked Krishna, "Why did he become a river?" And he said that his affection for us transformed him into liquid pram, which will continue to flow on this mountain to beautify its slopes and to glorify bhakti. The Ribhu Muni worshipped Krishna and revered Srimati Radharani as his most beloved. This was opposite of the gopis, as it is as well to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And then that night, tonight, when Krishna left Srimati Radharani, and the gopis assembled on the bank of Jamuna, chanting his holy names, he did not reappear. And when the merciless sun rose into the sky, and the gopis did not go home, they stayed in the forest, searching everywhere, asking every tree and creeper and bird and deer, "Have you seen Krishna? Where is he gone?" And as Jashoda searched the palace, and Nanda searched Nandigram, and the gopas searched the pastures, the gopal was nowhere to be found. And then they began asking one another, "Is it a dream that he had come back for the month of Kartik? Or was it a dream that he ever left for?" They could not decipher between so-called reality and so-called dream, because in the separation he was nearer and dearer to them than ever. So they went about their duties, fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. is ever present in their remembrance of him. And Krishna, feeling separation from the Brijavasis, lived in Mathura, sustained only by the love of the Brijavasis, which they poured upon him in their thoughts. What does Krishna mean when he says he cannot reciprocate a gopi's love? There's a difference between the love of Krishna and the love of the gopis. The love of Krishna, albeit to varying degrees, is distributed to all living entities in creation, a truth without which the world would cease to be. Whereas the gopis' love is focused exclusively upon Krishna. And Krishna is by nature the enjoyer, whereas the gopis are exemplary in wanting only Krishna's enjoyment. And while the queens of Dwarka, headed by Lakshmi Devi, enjoy seeing Krishna's pleasure, the gopis have no interest whatsoever in their own enjoyment, only Krishna's pleasure. And the exclusivity and intensity and selflessness of the gopis' love constitutes a nature and a concept so foreign to Krishna. And this is the paradox he's reflecting upon as Kaviraj Goswami writes Krishna's thoughts in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I am the source of all knowledge, but this love is beyond my ability to comprehend. I am the source of all joy and bliss, but the gopis experience more joy and bliss than do I. And as they approached him, he could not reciprocate because their love was beyond his ability, meaning it was more powerful than he. And what do we do when we meet a more powerful personality or energy or dynamic? We surrender and we worship them. So how did Krishna reciprocate the gopis' worship of him? In 1486 AD, the fulfillment of a life of tapasya and prayer came about when Advaitacharya, contemplating how to bring the Lord down to deliver this world, heard a very sweet verse drift into his mind. Sri Krishna, who is most affectionate to his devotees, sells himself to that devotee who offers him a mere palmful of water and tulsi leaf. And worshipping Shalgam Shiva, tulsi mantras and Kanchi's water, praying, sometimes in loud calls which resounded through Vaikuntha, and then like rolls of thunder rolling off into the tender sobs like a little child, he pleaded the Lord to come. And Lord Gauranga appeared in his world to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. And what does it mean that they are milkmaids? Obviously, they tend the cows. Furthermore, they milk the essence of Krishna's love. And Lord Gauranga, then distributed its condensed ecstasies to all the world, while all the time himself, enduring the ordeals of sacrifice and suffering to the extent of separation from Krishna, thereby Lord Gauranga reciprocated fully the desires of his devotees, and only then was he able to liquidate the debt that carried over since his Vajralila. In the history of exploration of the depths of the heart of Sri Krishna, the chronicles of Gauralila constitute the ultimate revelation. And in following the footsteps of the gopis, what Lord Gauranga experienced, the six Goswamis articulated and formulated into a sadhana by which we too can follow in those footsteps to attain a goal that Lakshmi Devi could not achieve. Kartik comes from the word Kartiki, who is the daughter of Kalavati, and is the first to bind Krishna, not by a rope, but by the delicate golden sash which adorns her slender waist, because she was upset with Krishna that he was late one night for a rendezvous. So she bound him, and he explained that Mother Jashoda kept me at the palace for a very important festival for Kartik. And when she heard that, she released him. But Krishna was so delighted to be bound by the waist that he said, "A most special name, most dear to me, will evolve from this pastime, and it will appear in this world when Mother Jashoda binds me by her robe, by which I will become known as Damodar." And that robe of Mother Jashoda, which binds Sri Krishna, has a mutual influence. Sri Krishna also carries a rope to bind the cows, but by that rope, Krishna is bound to the cows. Sometimes he wears his robe loosely across his shoulder, looped, indicating he is searching for one lost soul to capture into the network of his pastimes. And when he wears that rope on his turban, that means he was successful and the devotees are jubilant. But in binding that soul to his heart, Krishna also becomes bound to the heart of that soul. And amongst all devotees who approach Krishna, the gopis are the most exceptional. Thus Krishna promises to reciprocate but finds himself unable, and told them that they must remain satisfied with the bhakti itself, for he surrenders to their love, which is more powerful than he is. Krishna's surrender to the mysteries and intricacies of the gopis' love comprises the deeper significance in the appearance and pastimes and precepts of Lord Gauranga. And those with fine intelligence, Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Krishna Bhavantasa Krishna, Sangopanga Siparsanam, He is Krishna, but he's not dark. He's golden, because he has adopted the bhava and illustrious Srimati Radharani to reveal his innermost identity and aspiration as Gopi Bharata Padakamalaya Das Das Hayas. He surrenders to their love and follows their path and invites us to take up that path as well, beginning with the humility of the gopis in serving the servants of the servants for the pleasure of Sri Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
You said that he came back and then he saw Radharani and the gopis, and his limbs went in, eyes went big.
That's when he came back from Dwarka.
Ah, it's another instance.
Because Lord Gauranga enjoyed pastimes at the house of Dhanpatabhata, Prabodhananda Saraswati, and their Prabodhananda Saraswati's little nephew, Gopal. And in the course of that stay, they had wonderful conversations, especially when Mahaprabhu asked Dhanpatabhata that Lakshmi Devi wants to associate with my lord, who is a gopa named Gopal. He said, there's nothing wrong with that. That's another form of Narayan. Mahaprabhu asked, but how is it that she was not able to associate with my Gopal the way she wanted? Understand these things. You are that same Krishna. You explain yourself. He said,
instructs me to follow in the footsteps of the gopis.
What does that mean?
Yes.
Das, das, and das. Also, exclusive devotion, selfless service, and sacrificial mentality for the pleasure of Krishna. Exclusive focus on Krishna's pleasure, as only the gopis do. My Lord Gaurava's mercy and Srila Prabhupada's kindness, that path has become accessible to us by the process of Gopi Bhakti Padakamalayar Das Das Das.
How do we reconcile the glorious surrender of the gopis who gave up so many things to please Krishna, especially considering their situation? Young girls, married, some of them, giving up their children, their husbands in the middle of that, going to Krishna, giving up caring about social conventions. How do we balance their glorious surrender to the complications that occur in this world if we become that enthusiastic?
Following in the footsteps does not mean artificial. Does not mean imitation. It means soberly surrendering to the guidance of great souls who have the realization of our proper relationship with the environment.
So what you're saying is the progressive, that surrender is the progressive, it's a progressive path. Let me ask you this. Is surrender an individualized progressive path, or is it an absolute jumping off the bridge?
Well, even the concept of leap of faith is not an irrational plunge into the unknown. It implies the confidence that Krishna should protect us. But we should not proceed without the blessings and guidance of the great souls. We should not act independently of those who have the realization how we should proceed and guide us accordingly. We should never stray from the shelter of the great souls who understand what Krishna desires from us and when. Because if we immaturely or prematurely renounce, we will become more attached. So it has to be a gradual, progressive
Vaishnava Maharaj ki.
Thank you very much. Let's ask all the devotees to stand.